With me here today is Lois Eakin. Lois is an LICSW, or a licensed independent clinical social worker, but she also has background in occupational therapy and is a licensed psychotherapist in private practice in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Lois weaves together an extensive background in social work, public policy, occupational therapy, physical healing arts, somatic and psychodynamic psychotherapy to meet her clients' needs. Her love of the natural world, movement, improvisational dance, interplay expressive arts, and cultural healing practices inform her life and her work. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here. Thank you for doing this work.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and the clinical setting you work in?
Well, I actually have my office in my home and a separate office space, but it is part, for me, of an integration of the flow of my work and life. And so I work with individuals, I work with couples, I work with some families, and I also do some consultation and supervision with other psychotherapists.
And so what is it? What approach do you use in your work?
I actually use a very integrative approach. So it's a psychodynamic approach. So I look at patterns for people across their lifetime and look at patterns in their lives that may be held in a way that is restricting their lives. And I'm what's called a somatic psychotherapist, which is a new movement in psychology, coming out of some of the neurobiology and the integration of that into the treatment of trauma. And so it is a actually truly integrated way of working with trauma in the body as a mental health approach, and is actually tremendously exciting.
Can you talk about what specifically you do with clients without giving any trade secrets away?
So the work is based in a deep attunement within the therapist. So it really calls for something in the therapist that is new, and that is that the therapist needs to be embodied and not approaching things from a purely mental point of view, so that it requires actually a fair amount of work on the part of the therapist for that attunement. So the work is based in the realization that a lot of trauma is held physically in the body, and that the autonomic nervous system responds to overwhelming emotional experiences and then creates binds, actually emotionally and physiologically in the body that restrict the ways in which people can live their lives going forward.
Okay.
So it is an attunement to the way in which people are talking about their story from both their story about it, but what they are telling you about the way it affects their bodies and their vitality for life. And there actually are observable things that people will do in the session, if you're attuned, that are movements that give the therapist an awareness of where things may be blocked in the body.
So it sounds like it's a very kind of a whole systems approach where you're not separating too much the mind and the spirit from the body, but looking at things from a very kind of integrative perspective.
You absolutely are. Yeah. So that you are attending to the enteric brain in the gut, and all of the input of that particular brain and all the brain centers throughout the body that feed into the central nervous system. and that you are paying deep attention to those as potentially the originator
of whatever the problem. Yeah, of whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then moving with a rhythm back and forth between the body and the mind, and actually literally attempting to reintegrate the body and the mind.
That sounds like very interesting work.
It's lovely work. It's just great, yes.
So how would you say your current practice is informed by your background in occupational therapy?
I just, you know, you had asked me about this, and it allowed me to do some reflection.
Yeah.
And so I actually had some questions about it recently at a conference and sat with it a bit and realized that in occupational therapy, I mean, sense reintegration, which is really the heart of what I'm doing and was my specialty in OT, comes out of occupational therapy. And there is such a lovely combination in OT of both precision and of overall breadth of understanding how human beings function in the world. And I carry that in my bones. I mean, the training that I received in OT and the practice of it just was really a precursor to what it is that I'm doing now.
And what kind of methods or approaches that you took with you from OT, what kind of stands out for you, or you think, like some of the sensory integration things that you, can you speak a little bit more to that?
I can speak a little bit more to it. If I speak specifically about sensory integration,
yes.
The idea that we take in information through all of our senses continuously, and that they are then coordinated in our vestibular system, helping us to move and helping us to orient ourselves in the world effectively, and then feeding that information to the brain is really at the heart of sensory integration.
Yeah.
And then all the many minute ways in which that might not go well, and the interventions around the places where that might not be flowing smoothly. And that is underlying so much of what OT is about. It plays out into, you know, both physical medicine, functional medicine, mental health, but it's, you know, it's the origin of it.
And so what place do you see for those things in mental health care?
I would suggest that anybody working in mental health consider some of that foundational integration as the source of what might bring somebody into any mental health setting, because they're coming in not living their life as fully as they might, or having various ways in which their lives aren't flowing. And so I think it's something that's, you know, of great benefit to anybody, you know, whether that's the physician, whether that's the nurse, that's the care coordinator. I think it's a part of, you know, I'll go so far to say, Gisli, that I'm, with my public policy background, I think we're at a height of fragmentation in our healthcare systems. And if we want to think about healthcare systems, if we want to really think about the macro of fragmentation, and that every aspect of healthcare is like the human body feeding sensory information into the system that needs to be effectively coordinated in order to operate efficiently and well and with vitality. So that's true for the healthcare system, and that's true for human beings. And how do we do that?
Right.
We should all be thinking about that all the time and moving from the very precise assessment mm-hmm. of what an individual needs mm-hmm. from a particular professional to the whole.
Now, kind of coming from that, and I think yes. that's pretty related, how would you kind of define or how do you see integrative mental health?
I just got a flash in my mind of the reason that I went to policy school.
Yeah.
So at the time, I was the director of a partial and day treatment mental health
sure.
program for children and adolescents
sure.
in a big hospital setting. And we had come to a place as a team
mm-hmm.
that was operating so seamlessly in the communication mm-hmm. between all the parties
yeah.
and the families
yep.
and the children and the social services.
Yep.
And it was so rewarding to all of us and it was so successful that I decided that it could go broader and that if such a model was possible in those settings, that to look at how it could be attended to policy-wise
sure.
was a good idea. That was 20-plus years ago, and there weren't as many opportunities as I think they are now. But I think integrated mental health, I work that way with my clients in this private practice setting.
Right.
We have really close relationships with psychiatrists, with nurse practitioners, with homeopaths,
right.
with people who do functional medicine.
Yep.
If there are medical issues, the physicians. And so we are always in dialogue about what is needed,
yeah.
what's missing and what's needed and how those can come in at the right moment to support the person in their life. Yeah, does that feel like it answers some of what you're looking for? Is
yeah,
there something in
addition? I think so. No, what I guess what I'm hearing from you is how you see integrated mental health as being, first of all, integrated, and or basically from the standpoint that we're working with both the physical aspect and the mental health aspect of the person.
Yes.
But it seems to go beyond that. And be like the approach both in your clinical practice and then that you when you work with a team is that you take the whole system and then you refer out to different people as needed, but that you really try to approach the person as a whole. Is that what I'm...
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a given assumption.
Yeah.
That the person is a whole person.
Yeah.
And that the person is a whole person and a deeply important whole person to even the cultural fabric of our society.
Yes.
There's a lovely film that I would recommend that I just saw recently that is Norwegian, I believe, and As It Is in Heaven. And it's a beautiful film. And in particular, music is at the center of this. But what you see is that you see an incredible integration of the community, and there are mental health problems that are addressed. There are problems of family systems that are addressed,
mm-hmm.
that there's a flow that begins to happen in the community
mm-hmm.
and a vitality that happens in the community and in the people mm-hmm. individually.
As I kind of talk to more people about this issue, it's almost overwhelming, but it's in a positive way, how many things come into play when
yes.
helping people get better and stay better.
Yes, and how much it is to the benefit of all of us.
Can you speak a little bit more to that?
I would sort of say that integrative mental health mm-hmm. and integrated health care and medicine
yeah.
is foundational to most a re-envisioning in our cultures,
sure.
in our societies,
yeah.
that we begin to think about ourselves as interconnected.
Yeah, in a very concrete way.
Yes.
We are. I mean, that's obvious.
We absolutely are. It is an illusion.
Yeah.
And in fact, this goes to my work where what I find with people as a somatic therapist,
sure,
that people have had an experience that has been traumatic in their bodies that makes them feel separate from life, makes them feel flawed, makes them feel limited, makes them feel other than a part of life. And so then they tell a story about themselves, and it's a story of separation, and it's a story of pathology. And what I do with them in my office is that we drop back down into the body.
Okay.
And we remember that they are whole and that they are part of life, and that those beliefs that have come in are an illusion. And it sounds simplistic, and yet it is so deeply profound, that that sense that there has been something that's gotten in the way of their wholeness and can shift. And it's almost like we all know this in the deepest places of ourselves. But we forget, and we're oriented away from it.
Well, and this unity and interconnectedness, it sounds sometimes, I think to many, it sounds a little bit lofty.
Yes.
But it is so concrete. Driving here on the freeway today,
yes,
if one member of society would have decided not to abide by the rules,
yes,
or decided to drink a quart of vodka, like some of my clients certainly have done, and go out for a drive, that could affect me and other people in a specific, very concrete way. When I stop and get breakfast, it's the same thing. People can choose different things to be different ways, which then affect me. And then it's the same for me. I can choose specific actions that then affect other people.
Indeed.
And that can again affect other people. That's not really an opinion. That's the way it is.
It really is the way it is.
Yeah.
And it can sound lofty, but it's actually the most literal thing that there is.
Exactly. So it makes sense to me that this idea of isolation and, I don't know if we should use the word loneliness with that.
Absolutely, that's being, a part of it.
Yeah, being separate.
Yes, being less than, a sense of being less than.
Would that contribute to specifically those dealing with depression, or would that kind of go across the diagnoses?
Oh, yeah. It would. It would go across the diagnoses. I mean, it would go into things as specific, you know, we would expect it to be in depression, in PTSD, but it's also there in workaholism.
Yeah.
It's there in family fragmentation. It's there in addiction.
Yeah.
It's really across all of the places. It's where I find it. I work with a lot of couples. And oftentimes people are coming to see me because the quality of their relationship has become shallow and unrewarding. And there is a hopelessness that's set in. And to drop down into the body and to remember, for them to remember who they have been to each other and to have a sense that that's retrievable, it's a very specific thing that happens. There's a hope and there's a, and they can feel how that might be possible. Workaholism, you know, is such a way that we get separated from ourselves and our lives.
Talking about these things and then talking about working with the body, getting to the body. Now, I do not come from an OT background, so I'm curious to know, this might sound kind of simplistic.
Yeah.
But things like grounding, how is that related to kind of what you're... Is there a connection between those two things, or is it totally like a separate?
Easily, what I would say is that grounding really is literally about being in the body. And so the practicality and functionality of OT at its best would be to bring someone into their body. And that, I'm sure you do see that when you see them working with these young people, and there's an actual interaction that happens.
Yes, yes.
And in that interaction, mm-hmm. there is a felt sense of connection.
Right.
To hopefully to the OT and to themselves. And that's very settling to the body and would be very settling to these young people.
Yeah.
Yes, many of the difficulties, even characterologic difficulties mm-hmm. that come into being are mental overrides to a difficulty of being in the body because mm-hmm. their early experiences would have been overwhelming in ways we come to understand in working with them. But the overwhelm of those experiences makes it very dangerous for them to be in their bodies.
Yeah.
And so there is an aspect of OT that it becomes safe. It's safe to be in your body and to be working literally on something with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a reintroduction, grounding in that way. When I started, I started in very acute mental health programs.
Okay.
In locked psychiatric units, locked chemical dependency units, and very intense programs.
Yeah, settings.
OTs were always a part of those settings all the way through. And budget cuts have certainly been a part of that diminished sense. I don't know that I know currently what the profile is of OT in mental health programs.
Yeah,
and I will tell you that when I was, before I oversaw the day treatment and the partial hospitalization, I oversaw the occupational therapists, music therapists, recreational therapists throughout all the mental health programs in the, do I say a system?
Yeah, that's
the
fine.
Fairview system.
Okay, yeah.
During the time of my tenure, I can't remember the numbers now, but I remember that the staff was cut by half.
Okay.
So we were incredibly creative as a department in the way in which we did that.
Yeah.
But you don't reduce a staff by half. And that was happening everywhere without that very much impacting the footprint of that profession.
Yeah.
And I think it is, I actually think it's a very sad thing. And I think that occupational therapy would provide an integrative model in any mental health setting, because that is at core what they are about.
Yeah.
It's very easy for us in an inpatient mental health program, and I've seen it again and again and again, that we don't even imagine how that person goes back into their life.
Yeah.
That we become so insular that we feel that the interventions we are doing are the most important thing that's happening in that person's life.
It's adorable.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It truly is. and other things, adorable.
Yeah.
And then the person goes out and needs to live.
Yeah.
And needs to go back into a life that hasn't been touched.
Yeah.
And OTs always think about function, and it's the core. How people function in their lives. Adorable.
That, yeah, I mean,
it's great.
Just, it's,
it is.
Yeah,
it is. We're so human, right?
One of the reasons I was interested in getting you, because I know you're a systems thinker as well.
Mm.
How do you see the changes that have been going on in the last maybe 10 years when it comes to integrative mental health? And how do you kind of see policy changes affecting the practice of integrated mental health in the future?
Oh, it's a big question.
Yeah.
And I would say that I think that we're at a crossroads.
Okay.
And that it is a time where that question is tremendously important mm-hmm. because, as I said before, I think we've come to the point of maximum fragmentation. And our health systems and our mental health systems are so strained by the budget cuts, by the stressors, and by the reimbursement structures
mm-hmm.
that cause us to think in such narrow and immediate and fragmented ways. Mm-hmm. And there is also, has evolved an idea that if there's something that looks like it's immediately, you know, it's just sort of like crossing the T and dotting the I.
Sure.
If that's been achieved, that then is a successful outcome. And it is not a successful outcome. Really, I would say that the financial structure of reimbursement is so strong an influence around the way in which people work in healthcare and mental health. Do you know, it makes me think of there's a program in Iona called Iona.
Okay.
Began in Massachusetts and is showing up in different parts of the country. I think it's in Seattle now as well.
Okay.
And it is an example of something that we might consider, that this is a health system that is oriented to looking at the most complex situations and giving them the most attention from a team perspective, and actually going into a lot of detail of how healthcare translates into the person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're putting attention on, I read an example recently around somebody wasn't taking their meds, and some time was spent to say, well, now why is that? And the woman said, I can't swallow them, they're too big. So the intervention was to talk to the pharmacist and find that actually a smaller pill could be taken.
Yeah.
And so systems that are becoming that practical, and Iona is, you know, presenting themselves as a cost saving. That cannot be the primary driver, but it certainly needs to be one.
Yeah.
But they aren't mutually exclusive. Cost savings and integrative care.
Exactly.
For the whole person.
Yes. So I would like to ask you how those different parts of you kind of get together and come together and work together.
Oh, well, I'll answer this on the truest level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the way in which they do is through the work I have done individually around integrating and somatically integrating, and I use that term, and it's such a general term, but the ways in which I am able to reflect on my own experience and move within my own mind and body between the states of being that at this age and time in life could be quite separate.
Yes, exactly.
And yet are completely one. So my own ability to reflect and to move between these states, and in so doing, weaving them together, is the work I do every day sitting with individuals.
Now, having this unique approach that you have or this unique experience, what advice would you give healthcare professionals about interprofessional cooperation and collaboration?
The advice I'd give at the root would be to take the time to reflect on your interventions, on your actions, on your own internal states. There are such simple things. There was a study, I can't quote it, it's third hand, but about physicians and the impact of pausing at the door for a moment before they go into the room and the literal impact on quality of care of that. And we can think that we are too busy to do that, and we can't be too busy to do that. It's costly to think that we're too busy to do that financially and
so you're
relationally.
Right. And you're talking about presence?
Yes, I am.
And being mindfully present in the moment, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And how do you think that connects with the ability to work successfully with persons from different professions? Mm-hmm. Like kind of meeting yourself? What kind of insight could you offer us on kind of that, because sometimes there are tensions and there are turf wars and one one profession owns a specific intervention, yes, or a group of people.
Yes.
You know, like families.
Exactly.
Or being holistic or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So can you speak to that a little bit?
I can. I'd love to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah.
This happens, say I've got a couple. I'll give an example of a couple in my office.
Sure.
And they'll be suddenly arguing and they'll be in a very patterned argument. And I have a role where I can say, okay, whoa, wait. So let's just take a moment. What mm-hmm. is happening here? When did this begin to feel upsetting to you? And, okay, so now there's some assumptions that just happened here.
Right.
Can we take a moment? Can we check? Is that what was going on over here with the other? Is that what was going on over here with the other?
Right.
There's that sort of reflection is relevant to how we might interact as professionals. When the tensions get high, we tend to get insular and fragmented mm-hmm. and just put our heads down and get out of relationship and go for our own intervention and let the rest go. And it doesn't need to be like that. Right. There absolutely are those moments to pause and to say, whoa, what just happened here? And to hold the care of the individual we're working with, or, you know, the people we're working with, as deeply important, so important that it behooves us to pause and to understand something about what just happened between us.
And name it, I guess.
And name it for their sake, for our sake, but for theirs.
And I've been in so many meetings and situations where that is exactly what's going on.
Yes.
There are these tensions and there's a turf and there's maybe a little defensiveness on one part and a little disrespect on the other.
Yes.
And so your suggestion would be just to name it.
Name it, yes. I think it calls for some courage in us. And it calls for us, and if we want to talk about it, integrate it, then it calls for us to draw upon our deepest selves. And to speak sometimes when we might not, but to do so from the deepest place we can find.
Now, we've been talking about kind of integrated mental health from different standpoints. Mm-hmm. And as I said, your kind of unique stance is that you come from all these different approaches. Mm. It sounds like you've been able to, without much tension, integrate these different professions in your professional approach.
Hmm.
That's what I'm hearing.
Without much tension.
Yeah.
It's so, yes. Well, I can remember when I left my role, director of integration between finance and operations.
Right.
In a very large healthcare system, and realized that I needed to do something that was more deeply integrated in me. And I went through a soul searching about it and returned to my roots of mental health. But I was terrified. Yeah. I was leaving a very well-paid position with a lot of influence and a lot of freedom, and you know, it looked great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just wasn't what needed to be for my most integrative self. But it was absolutely terrifying to do, and there were sleepless nights for a good time. And I have never, and that's the thing I would say, I have made some leaps like that. And I have never, in the end, been sorry. I have been delighted, and it gives me a freedom to have done so.
It sounds like
not very easily. Always.
Right, right. So there were tensions along the way.
There were.
I'm just witnessing a finesse product here. Yeah,
right.
I get it.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Well, I think that I will say, I had mentioned to you earlier, I did my Plan B in public policy on the structures of health care systems in the U.S. and Europe, oriented to the fear of death. And I finished that by asking the question of what would it look like if our orientation was towards life? And
you mean the healthcare system?
The healthcare system. Yeah. And so I would say that Since that time, my progression mm-hmm. in my own work mm-hmm. and in my own life has been toward what is it to live with the greatest freedom and the greatest vitality and the most life. Mm. And I think that ought to be the orientation that a healthcare system has towards health and vitality.
It doesn't sound very far-fetched.
It doesn't, does
no,
it?
No. Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. Well, thank you so much for coming. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thank you.